Hello and welcome to the 13th episode of Season 3 of Your Mom's Podcast, the only podcast that's worth walking out on a date with one of Degrassi's coolest girls. I'm Avis.
I'm Caroline.
And today we are discussing Degrassi Season 3, Episode 17, Don't Dream, It's Over. Roses are red. Is Terry dreaming it's over? Hard to tell what she's thinking while she's in a coma. Terry started talking to Rick again and decides to bring him along on a day trip with her friends. When Rick overhears Paige calling him a psycho, things quickly escalate and Terry finds herself in the hospital. Over in the B-plot, Sean's seeming homophobia turns out to be a poor articulation of the very normal want to spend time alone with his partner.
Even though that was articulated, poor emphasis on poor.
I was really happy that it wasn't homophobia.
It was giving homophobia with the popcorn and like the reach in and like the brush off the hand. It's like you can't, it's two guys just eating popcorn next to each other and between it. This is not gay. There's no gay here. That's what it was giving. But yeah. I'm glad it wasn't.
Two bros chilling in a hot tub 5 feet apart.
5 feet apart.
Gay.
But they're not gay. No, I feel like Marco, I like that these episodes are getting more insular in the way, like they are giving us the little heart to hearts that are a little bit deeper than, okay, this is what it looks like. And then we delve deeper versus this first season. If this was a first season episode, we would have gotten none of the conversation with Sean and Marco. Because there wasn't that, like, there weren't layers to the friendship yet to call them, for Marco to call himself a security blanket. For Ellie to be able to say, I have never really done a real relationship before. Like, this is a plot that we're getting that is based on multiple other plot lines being set up. And I love that we couldn't have gotten this episode before. Because in a way, I do really relate to Ellie's like nervousness and saying, you know, like, I don't really know how these things go. Like, I know what I did with Marco and that wasn't real. So what am I doing? I mean, I'm doing what feels comfortable, essentially. And that's having Marco around so that she doesn't actually have to like, do anything. Yeah. Because Marco's like her soulmate, but he's just not, you know, they're not sexually, he's just not that into you. And I think that I think Ellie is enhanced as a character for me in relation to Marco, especially in this episode, because it's just like highlighting how some people don't have soulmates that they fuck. Some people have platonic soulmates and they are just as valid, if not, and like sometimes they stand the test of time better than those, you know, romantic slash sexual partnerships. And I really like that about their friendship, that, I mean, for the toxicity it started out with, that it actually does emerge as like a pretty healthy friendship, especially with Marco saying, you can't use me as a crutch to avoid emoting and being in an actual relationship where there are stakes and, you know, your feelings are actually involved in a way that is respectful to you.
Yeah, it's good development. It's a terrible plot.
Okay, here's my thing with this plot. So Sean, he's like, okay, you want to come to this movie that Ellie obviously doesn't care about, over this film festival or whatever the fuck that she was. Was it a film festival?
It was like a Bollywood double feature.
A double feature.
I don't think it was actually Bollywood. It was Indian films of some sort, though.
Okay. And she, of course, she says yes because she's like, oh, I do want to hang out with him. But then she gets there and Jay, and I know it's supposed to be a double date, but Jay and Alex are there and like he's upset. They did, neither of them communicate very well.
No, like nobody's
like she shouldn't have brought Marco, but like I don't know. I don't know. Maybe it's
just tell your boyfriend you have plans already. Say, look, I'm really sorry. Marco and I have plans for this thing, and like I know it's the premiere of your thing, but your thing's gonna be playing for months. Yeah. I'll go see it with you. Yeah. Go see it with Jay and Alex. I'll go see it with you again. But like, well, Marco and I have this thing and it's only this Friday or whatever night.
That might just be too reasonable for Ellie though. She does this whole thing where she pauses and she really does thoughtfully like think about what she should tell Sean and then decides to just say, no, it's all good. Instead of saying, I
tell you that Marco's
oh yeah, I'm just gonna bring him so that you have no choice but to accept him coming.
Right. Surprise.
Surprise. It's like,
and he's like, this is not a throuple. I would like to be dating you.
Right. Which, you know. I mean, you get where Sean's coming from because it definitely is like, okay, you had a chance to communicate with me. I specifically came to your co-op to communicate with you about something I'm really excited about. So couldn't you have like done a woosah and just said, I already made plans with Marco at the very least, because she already did a pause. So she could have done a pause and a woosah, gathered her anxiety, and then actually just told him. And Sean, I feel like, would have appreciated that more than having to be on a double date or a throuple date with Marco. Like,
this is one of the reasons, though, that I don't like Sean and Ellie, is, like, they don't really have fucking anything in common.
No. It's like, and I mean,
like, if they're not they're not the same kind of edgy.
No, they're not. They're very, and, like, they don't really have a whole lot in common.
Right? She doesn't want to sit through Extermination 27 or whatever it is any more than he wants to sit through a like foreign film double feature.
Right, like they're just two opposite ends of a spectrum.
I don't see them listening to the same music.
I don't think so. I mean, if we think about the episode, like it, like they really didn't have any interaction before Take On Me. So it's like, would they have, if Take On Me did not use the trope of that the Breakfast Club has established of different cliques coming together and learning about, you know, one another and then ultimately departing with some sort of relationship, if not just a tie to each other forever. I don't know if they could justify Ellie and Sean being together, because how else would you have introduced them? Like, there were just no other, like, up until this point, like, they don't exist in the same, like, not even social sphere, but it's just, like, they don't connect anywhere. There's nowhere where they would have run into each other. I would even say, even in the halls of Degrassi, like, she has to go out of her way to find him, because he's in the shadowy part of Degrassi, where apparently the janitor doesn't change the light bulbs.
Oh my god, that light bulb is driving me insane.
I'm like, this is insane, driving me bananas, because I'm like, excuse me, why is this the one part of the school that's like, oh, this is the bad part of town, so we've gotta, not where the shots are fired, but this, right? Is where we've got
maybe
to.
If you fix the fucking light bulb, people wouldn't be breaking into the fucking vending machines.
Maybe there wouldn't be flashing shadows in which for them to
crazy, quite right,
right.
Quite frankly, like,
put them on edge real quick. That's a way to piss me. A blinking light really does, like, oh, it makes my skin crawl on a way. Like, I just can't stand anything like creaking, blinking.
All right, stop, because I feel like you're gonna manifest shit for our trip. Don't do it. No blinking lights.
Oh, hope no. Hell no. Sorry. I don't, it's like okay. To manifest anything that's gonna really, especially in a car. No. But
no, God, I wasn't even thinking about the car. Jesus.
Oh, what were you thinking?
I was
about?
Thinking like the hotel or our placement at the convention.
Oh, girl, if there's a leaky pipe, I will be on the case. Okay, don't worry. I cannot stand a leaky pipe, and they shall fix it. I'm an owner. I pay for that shit. But yeah, sorry, that bass in my voice was not necessary. But yeah, the fact that she has to go out of her way just to find this man makes it clear that they just don't... She's doing pieces on him. She sees him as like a subject, as something yeah. she's so far from that she has to study him.
You know, and I think they have, like, they don't have shared trauma yet. but I do think they have, like, trauma bond. We know Sean's parents are alcoholics, too.
Right, they do have the trauma bond. Even though they haven't shared it yet, there is that level of, like, seeing feeling someone like uncared on your... for.
Sean doesn't have it as much right now because he's still got tracker, handsome-ass Cameron.
He does.
But he will feel that pain one day.
Yeah, one day, and, not too far in the future.
You know, they're just two crazy kids alone in a crazy world. But, like, they have nothing... Like, I feel like Emma saw him less as a project than...
I feel like... I agree with that. And it's actually, to be fair, I think... I don't know if I've... I hope I'm not, like, retracting on things, because I think that watching the show in the critical lens has really, like, changed. Not even changed, but either solidified or completely thrown me off of previous opinions. I never really cared for Sean and Ellie. I just didn't think that they had the spark. I thought that they looked cute together, but I never thought that they were the most meaningful relationship. It's kind of just the most meaningful relationship that Ellie gets to have. Unfortunately, it's not the most meaningful relationship that Sean gets to have. As far as the meaning and as far as the relation to each other, I actually think that Sean and Emma have way more in common than Sean and Ellie ever did. Like, at least, like, they were in the same class, so they got to develop, you know, similar interests and not even, and like, maybe affect each other with their just being around
Emma's
each other
raised
more.
By a single parent. Sean is right. raised by a single 20-something-year-old
mechanic. Right. They bonded on that before Emma's family changed. And like he saw her through a lot of really hard times for her in term, not even like devastating hard, but just hard in terms of growing up and change and dynamic shifting and stuff. And I really do think that they related a lot to each other in a non-trauma, in a non-trauma filled way that made their relationship so much lighter. While not being like shallow, like it's not like they had a shallow relationship. They actually did go through some shit together for how young they were. And I mean, I will still say that I don't think that they should be an endgame or a ship, like a endgame couple, but I do think that they are probably the most meaningful relationship for Sean that we get to see. And there's, it's like for Ellie and Sean, you would think that like a couple who goes on to like cohabitate would be way more intense and have a lot of layering and stuff. And I just,
wasn't cohabitation, like it was out of necessity,
right? I just mean like developing that dynamic and like having right. that added like adult responsibility. Like it, living with someone makes you know someone a lot quicker and in ways that you really wouldn't know them otherwise. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you would think that that would allow them to like explore depths that Sean and Emma didn't. But that's not the case for some reason. Either we don't get to see it, or I actually don't think it exists. I don't think it's just that we don't get to see it. So it's like, Ellie is like my favorite pairing for her is still Marco, unfortunately. Like, I really love her and Marco. I think that Marco brings out the best in her. And their depth is, it's very hard to match. So I do appreciate how he's like, you know, you need to kind of look at yourself in the mirror and realize that you are not ready to leave this chapter of our friendship behind where you lean on me instead of being in real relationships. Which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Took a while to get there.
It's a satisfying B plot in a lot of ways. It's not a satisfying relationship. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't really recall it ever becoming a satisfying relationship.
No, me either.
But like, it's fine. It's definitely, it is again, like, I don't know.
It is exactly fine.
It is exactly fine. I'm glad that it's not like a super ridiculous plot. You know, it's not Toby trying to find out if Terry's a mind reader.
right. It's not kooky.
Because, like, I feel like it would feel, you know, like if you go back to season two and you go back to Shout and you look at the B plots in Shout. They're honestly annoying, and they don't, like, they're lighthearted. Like, you know, it's supposed to be kind of like a stop and catch your breath moment, whatever, as we're fucking following Paige through all this crazy shit.
Yeah.
But they don't feel that way, you know? They feel too silly and out of place. This B plot at least felt, you know, it's not a bunch of trauma. It's not, you know, something that's going to be triggering, but it is. It also isn't Toby and JT can't share a locker. Fuck you.
Right? Like, this is just insufferable and too simple.
I'm glad we're out of middle school. I think that was
Glad we're out of middle school too. Like, it feels like we deserve it. We've done the work. We've laid the groundwork to be able to move on to things that aren't, like, so campy. And, like, we get the more of the Degrassi camp that I think people think of when they think of the show, coming up rapidly here with the B plots, which is what we need versus, like, oh, a palate cleanser or whatever. Like, I would just rather have B plots that are lower stakes, but they do still advance and develop characters. That's what we got here. Even though it really was just to kind of get Ellie into an actual relationship with Sean versus pantomiming one. Like, that's important, and it's something that didn't need its own A plot. And I think that they did a good job with kind of putting that into a B plot, because if that was a whole A plot, that would have been too much.
Yeah, definitely couldn't have. But I do think it's fine as a B plot, and I'm sure, like, I was never a girl who related to Ellie, but I'm sure for girls who related to Ellie, who were, like, similarly, like, timid and whatever, like, it was probably a helpful episode. It's, you know. But let's move on to the A plot, because...
Yeah, no, the B plot, though profound in a way, is pretty low stakes in comparison to what the fuck is going on with Miss Terry McGregor, whom I want so much, so much, so much more for. And unfortunately, I'm not going to get it.
We're not going to get it. I want to start off by pointing out some fuck them kids theory. Because it's right at the top of the episode. And here's the thing, I know what, you know, the non-believers are going to say is that Rick came up to Terry, Quan didn't partner them, and how would Quan know about their past and whatever? And, like, okay, maybe. Except I think that Quan is also, like, Emma status, lurking up in the halls and the windows of Degrassi.
I agree with that. We just
don't see her because she's actually good at it.
I agree.
And so, I mean, I don't know. What do you think about them being trust fall buddies? Was that a fuck them kids moment?
Well, so to me, I think so. Because if you look, I don't know why this makes so much, like, sense to me as, like, someone who used to teach. But, like, they already have their natural partners. They're already standing across from someone doing a thing. Am I frozen?
No. Well, I was going to say, why are we switching partners?
Oh, sorry. You were so natural with that. Sorry. And I'm a little bit high. I'm so sorry.
The trick is to be high all the time, Avis. And then you're just normal.
And then you're just normal. That's the baseline. No, I just think that I agree with that. Like, the natural partners are across. Why are we switching partners? What was the purpose of that?
Because it's drama class. And, like, it doesn't make sense to me.
I get, and, like, right, like, that's why, like, she can get away with that shit. And that's why it's a fuck them kids moment. Because so what are they gonna Quan say? Has
blood on her hands.
I think she can be implicated, because somehow you manage to not have these people interact until now.
Until Quan's fucking drama class.
Until Quan's fucking drama class.
When Paige has the keys to the minivan for the weekend.
It just seems like it's too perfect. Like, what intel does Quan have? Like, it says she hear Paige, like, yelling about it or something. Like, does she like,
we're all right, not becoming a full-blown tinfoil conspiracy podcast.
Like, that meme with the guy at the whiteboard with the red marker. Like, listen, just listen a second.
Charlie from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I was going to say, so thank you for knowing where that meme comes from. Thank you. No, it's like, we actually want to make that now, like, Quan fuck them kids, YMP.
Okay, I'm not making that. I still got to make you Lady and the Tramp and over some pizza. I meant to do that last week, but I was just so...
There's a meme queue. Week. It's a meme queue. It's fine. It's fine. No, it's fine. I really do think that there's some merit to that, because it's just, why do you, but regardless, they switch partners. Terry's just standing there. She's just standing there looking around for anybody but Rick to be her partner. Like, does anybody, I wish that he came up, I wish that he came up to her and was like, partners. And she's like,
no.
Does anybody else want to be my partner? Does anybody else, like, anybody else, Ms. Quan? Miss Quan, do you want to be my partner? Because I'd rather partner with Quan than you. She'll probably drop me. And I'd rather partner with her than you.
I hated it. It hurt me so bad.
It hurt me so bad.
I will say, yeah. Spinner and Paige doing their little trust fall was real cute.
It was. I actually really, Spinner and Paige, like, they're me together. They're growing on me too. On me. I think having Shane say, like, we were saying, like, oh, we didn't really get the chemistry between Paige and Spinner, and he's like, what, they were going on for a long time. Like, I mean, they were,
okay, you know what it is that it had been, like, when we started this journey, it had been a couple of years since I had watched Grassy,
especially from the beginning,
and
before,
so watching it from the beginning, like, because in Eye of the Beholder,
mm-hmm.
Spinner says, like, one word to Paige the whole episode. He's so clearly not interested in her. And then Terry gets a little drunk and says she thinks he's cute, and now he's...
Now he's just repulsed and up Paige's pole.
He's gonna borrow Paige's notes from now on. Like, and so, like, I don't like how they've started, but as I'm watching them grow as a couple...
Mm-hmm.
We'll get to it, actually. I want to talk a lot about Spinner.
About Spinner. Yeah, but to see that little moment with them, was that trust fall was very cute. And then, you know, of course, we've got to go back to fucking
Terry
and Terry. And he's just putting it on. He's laying whatever the thing he does with his personality on. And you believe him to a degree, which actually really sucks for us. It hurts
so bad to watch. I kept thinking about in, like, way, way back in Is It Under Pressure when Jimmy and Sean get in the fight?
I think that sounds right, yeah.
Whatever episode it is.
I think it is Under Pressure.
And I kept thinking about Terry being like, Sean pushed Emma and being so, like,
horrified.
And, like, Sean pushing Emma wasn't okay. It also wasn't like, I don't think Sean is an abusive partner.
No.
I don't think that was a sign of that. I think that was a lot of things coming together at the worst possible time.
She was intervening in an already physical altercation and was shoved in already in that frenzy. Like, I don't fight.
Still not
like
okay.
That. It's still not okay, but it's a different it's an entirely different context.
It's entirely different. Right. And, like, and we said when we watched that episode, like, baby, keep that energy. Please keep that energy.
Please. Right.
And to see her, because she's so badass and never gonna give you up. And she says, that was the last time you ever touched me.
I know, and it's like your heart, my heart, I think that's why in our discussion of Never Gonna Give You Up, we're just like, this deserved a two-parter. And I always, you know, this episode does not come that far after Never Gonna Give You Up. I think it's like just an episode in between or whatever, maybe two. But the thing is that plot line was still not fleshed out enough to where it should have been. To where we
Terry deserves better.
because like
relationship violence as a topic deserves better. It was
right. Yeah. It a nuanced topic. Like even in Degrassi classic, the character of Kathleen, who is involved similarly in domestic violence, is not put into a coma. She is still a character to the very end of the series, and though they don't discuss the depths of what she has gone through with that guy, she is not just written out of the show.
You know where the ball got dropped? You know where the ball got dropped is Paige did not say, Terry, let's go talk to Miss Sauvé.
Right.
You should have said, let's go talk to Miss Sauvé.
Let's go talk to, yeah, because Miss Sauvé can handle fucking anything.
But I guess, and you would think that Paige now, like, because she's got her understanding of trauma and the lasting effects of trauma would understand, but it's not Paige's fault, like, by any stretch.
No, even the way she, like, the way she says it, I love, actually, it made me really think the way that she says, we thought it was under control in the hospital with Terry's father. To me, it felt so much like, I think the whole premise of the show is, as parents not being there and adults not being there to like solve problems all the time, that kids really feel like, and I mean, I remember somewhat of what it feels like to be like, okay, it's me against the world. I've got no one in my corner. I've got to figure this out by myself with these two people over here that are my friends or whatever. It's like that mentality is such a teenager mentality to think that you can handle anything and everything that life throws at you. No, and I think that it's so illustrated here. Like,
yeah,
a teenager can't be under, like, adults have a hard time controlling, and it's nearly impossible to control a situation like this in adult relationships. They end in very similar ways. So,
and it's like, what could they, like, there's only so much you can do, right? Like, Spinner mm-hmm. was absolutely right. Once Rick was at the dot, Rick was coming to them to wherever the fuck they went. It looked like a campground.
Yeah, a campground. It's yeah, not like important, some sort of park. But they, like, yeah,
wherever they were.
There's Rick's picnic coming, tables.
Because if we leave mm-hmm. him alone, if we leave him behind, Terry stays. Like, Spinner was like, yeah,
can we respect that
on
moment too with the friends that be like that are like, no, the round table alert, of the, like, friends.
We've got some shy.
Yeah, we do. Like, this is a solid friend group, and everybody pitches in saying, like, we cannot leave, especially Hazel. Hazel's like, am I hallucinating? Like, I am not doing this, but also I'm not leaving her to be vulnerable to him again.
Right.
Like, it's very, like...
But I also get Paige and goals. Jimmy being like, no, fuck that. That guy's not coming with us. But
I 100% get that, too. It's like, they're two, you know, they make... And they both make
so they
make
bring
sense,
him with,
you know?
And, like... I don't know. Paige fucks up. It's not Paige's fault at all. But...
No, but...
It is worth noting that, like, unfortunately, when your friend is in that kind of situation...
Mm-hmm.
You can't be acting the way Paige was acting. Like,
no, you're gonna alienate
it personally the way she did. You cannot. Right.
It's just gonna further kind of support, and not to blame Paige, but just further support his agenda of isolating her mm-hmm. and making her feel like these people that she considers her friends are actually out in her worst interests instead of her best. And it makes
hard.
It's hard.
It's absolutely hard. And these are literal children.
It's hard not to react the way Paige is reacting, because it's just like,
it's
are
infuriating
you fucking
to
serious?
See your friends in those situations.
Yeah.
It is infuriating.
And to be powerless and to, like, I mean, you truly are powerless, because that is not, and I mean, you have recourse, but at the end of the day, you are not the person that can make the decisions needed to stay out of that situation. And not, there's no, and I feel like in that statement, I'm not really putting the onus on anyone, like, blaming, but I do think that the mental kind of load that it takes to be in that situation, I can't understand, but I do know that, like, making the decision to leave is not only dangerous, it's like, potentially cannot, you know, can backfire, and there's just other people can be impacted, and it's not something that's simple to say, okay, I left. Like, you can, I think it's illustrated in the older series where she breaks up with him and then he still continues to assault her even though she breaks up with him.
you know, like you think, okay, I've left this relationship, that then the violence is going to stop. And it doesn't always happen that way. And I mean, Terry and Rick weren't officially back together. They were just, you know, hanging out. And the fact that he still felt that, like, you know, ownership of her, it just goes to show you that it's not anything about, okay, I left the relationship or I left the situation. Like, if someone feels that way, and they have this ownership and really this abusive nature towards you, it doesn't really matter what you do. Really, like, multiple people need to be involved to intervene. And it really is not something that can even be managed with that. Like, it's super scary. Like, this shit is, like, terrifying to me, to all of the different nuances that are encompassed in domestic violence. It's so scary. Yeah.
And that scene is, like, really, really intense. I hate how cheesy that fall is, because I think it completely...
I actually have a surprise shots fired to tack on, but I do want to talk about that, because I tried to capture the horribleness of that stunt person. It's bad.
It's so bad, and it's... And, like, that scene is really... Like, Ephraim Ellis does an amazing job in that scene.
He does. He scares me. His acting is very, very organic. Like, it feels very real.
I thoroughly believe that, like, Ephraim Ellis has a whole backstory on Rick.
Oh yeah, right.
Like that, he's, you know what I mean?
Like, he's done that character work.
Yeah. And, like,
yeah, especially since he is a fringe character. Like, we don't... Like, he's fleshed out enough to not be a plot device, but...
You see 14 years of feeling belittled in that she doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to get him on the show so bad.
That sounds like something his mom possibly said to him or something. Like, the way that he says it is, like, it's, like, it's in his head. It's... That would be amazing to get him on the show, like, especially before... time stand
I've been
still
following him on Instagram, and I thought of you the other day because he had, like, I saw you tag his mom in something, and you want to know what his mom's name is?
Beverly.
Jerusha. Yeah, pineapples.
Jerusha. Oh shit, I love that.
Right,
a Jerusha in the wild. Oh, beautiful. Oh,
I've
beautiful.
Seen that name like thrice in the wild since you and I talked about Superstore.
Talked geeked about Superstore. Oh crap, that's so funny. It's a sign.
But no, it's like, and I want to, like, I know that this is a difficult thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. It's a controversial thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. I want to say first and foremost, fuck Rick. None of this is okay.
No.
And all of it is very tragic. Like, who Rick is tragic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And like, on one hand, like, deal with your shit. On the other hand, he is a child.
Yeah. It's definitely hard to be an adult and kind of look at this and see how, even though you can tell, he's one of those kids that you can tell just has such a hard time relating to other kids his age. He has such a hard time. Like, he struggles. And the things that he says don't land. You know, like, the kids just make fun of him or other him. And as someone who has been othered before, it is the worst feeling to be othered. And it does create a lot of resentment. It creates a lot of anger toward whomever kind of puts you in that box. But it also feels like, you know, you're powerless to kind of escape that sort of, like, social chamber, I guess.
Well, and I feel like it like, what happens in a case, like, with Rick is that, like, your inferiority complex begins to masquerade as a superiority complex.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I admit, yes, very much.
And
very much so.
And that's where it gets... Like, and so, yeah, like, I feel for Rick. I don't, like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, poor Rick. But I am going to sit here and be like, I wish things could have been different.
I very much wish things could have been different. Like, you can tell the enthusiasm he has with talking about anything he's interested in with Terry, to the point where, like, he cuts her off or lets her speak and, like, get out the last syllable and then jumps into, because he doesn't get to talk to people. You can tell that he does not get to talk to people about the things that he enjoys. And that's really sad. Like, he probably has in-depth conversations with his mom when his mom is around. But, like, that's your mom. We all love our mom. Well, we all have a mom. A lot of us love them. And I think it's a valuable relationship to have. Like, we see how fiercely his mother goes out, you know, to protect him, even physically, like, shielding him from another child. She puts claws on
Spencer. Like, she does not use force.
No, but she's like, get off of him. Sorry, guys. I just hear that, like, not to, I don't know if that's the actress's real accent. I'm just saying, like, iconic.
Like, but no, and it's tragic. And it's tragic for Terry. It's tragic for what's to come. And it's tragic for Rick.
It is. I am
sad that Rick's life was whatever it was that led to this.
Mm-hmm. We will get, even like, I mean, I will argue, because this is an argument for time standstill, but it really could have been different for him. And we see that. And that is what makes things so much more devastating, to know exactly what happens and see kind of the point of no return, in a sense. To know, okay, this is the time where there was no turning back, where it was already kind of written on the in the stars, on the wall, whatever you want to say. And that's real, like, gives me shivers, because this is literally a teen drama. But to know what fucking happens, and to have that knowledge of, like, okay, there's no more contributing events, really. This is kind of like putting those wheels in motion, and it's just going to keep rolling down the hill. And it's really,
like, not brought Rick back to Degrassi.
Okay. I mean, that's the last thing. People
could have said that's a bad idea.
Well, that's any number of people. We just know that that's not going to happen. He's right. We just know that that's not, for some reason, he's like, Degrassi, I want to go there. And that's it. Like, that's it.
Right.
Which I have zero. If I was fucking his mom, if I was fucking his mom, I would tell her, don't let that boy go back to that school.
No. Like,
pillow talk, like, hey, let me talk to you, young lady. I know you walk the boards at Stratford. However, keep that boy away from the damn community school to send him somewhere else.
So far ahead of ourselves. Like, this show.
This shit. But no, I mean,
have a lot to say when time stands still. Which, time stands still is going to be epic. Time will be standing still, so we can take all the time we need. I'm so excited for that episode, though.
It's going to be a really great episode.
We've got something really cool planned.
Yes, I'm excited. Get saddle up. But fuck it. I just really think it's Paige does tell Terry to go after him after they had that spat. But Paige couldn't have known. I don't think Paige, I think as soon as she said that, she regretted it. Like, you can see it on her face, like, fuck, what? Why did I just say that?
She could have done better, but I understand why she did. Like, it's...
Yeah. It's frustrating. Yeah. It's very frustrating. It's very hard. And Terry is not... Terry wants someone, you know? Like, and that's not... that's something that I feel like that is the most consistent part of her character, is that she would like to be with someone. Her friends are all around her, are having off. Yeah, pairing off and having these great cute double dates and relationships and stuff, and she's just the fifth wheel, like, and she loves all of them, but she's like, it's different. Like, how Hazel says, she's like, well, you obviously, you're coming, you'll be with all your friends, and she's like, well, it's not the same, is it, you know?
Yeah, I feel like even just like hanging girls is different.
Is different, right? It's
because, and I mean, they've got boyfriends, and their boyfriends are best friends.
Right? And their boyfriends are best friends for now, right? So they're just, that whole dynamic, it just strengthens their friendship and kind of others Terry in a way. Yeah. Like, and I mean, to a degree, I feel like Terry's always kind of been the other in that friend group. The hierarchy fluctuates, in my opinion, but it typically does. Like, Terry, for some reason, just doesn't go above Hazel in the social. She just doesn't go above Hazel in the social hierarchy. Hazel is seen as the second to Paige. And even though Justin Take On Me, we got that whole bootlicker taunting and stuff, but like, she is still seen of like, maybe less, well, slightly lesser, but equal social status. She's not status.
Ashley's shadow anymore. Ashley's got Ellie.
Ashley's like, got Ellie, right? So she's no, not.
No, I get all of, we're so fucking robbed of Terry. Robbed of Terry.
And it's actually really sad to like really think like this is it for her.
Yeah.
Like, we don't even, like, we get mentions of her. We get fucking Ashley going in.
And I want candy, but I think she might even be conscious. But I know
she, I think, they, like, I, oh, wait, do they talk? Oh, wait, maybe they talk for, like, a second, but then we don't, Ashley and her talk?
If she's conscious.
If she's conscious, I'm not sure.
We'll get there when we get there.
At some points in this fucking episode, it, like, in the very beginning of her in the bed, it looks like Christina Schmidt. Terry, but then like toward the end of the fucking episode, it doesn't even look like her anymore. It looks like that was just like an extra they put in the bed. Did they not want to pay to have Christina Schmidt lay in the bed? They're like, just put some heavy bandages on her. No one will notice.
Can I say too, I'm gonna miss Mr. McGregor.
Oh, he is such a gem. He's so heartfelt. He's one of the best, like, he manages to be like the best in every scene he gets. Like, he's a very classic actor. Like, his face acting, his, like, he's, I genuinely believed him when he was talking to Terry in Eye of the Beholder and just saying like, you're beautiful, like, you don't, you know, like, who, why wouldn't you have a date for the dance? And like, his, he's so earnest and he loves his daughter so much, and it's heartbreaking to see that that's not always like fucking enough. It sucks. But he, like, his, like, saying after Paige, you know, says, we thought it was under control. He's like, well, does it look under control to you? And, you know, even him lashing out is very respectful and, like, full of pain.
He's out of line. He's hurting so.
He is out of line. And
he's going it alone because he's a winner.
He's going it alone.
He's already lost a wife. Now he's looking at potentially losing his child. He's got probably little in the way of a support system.
Right. Like, they say the McGregor family, but, like, you know, it's really just.
It's just happened. It's just, you know, yeah, maybe his parents are him. Flying out. Maybe he's got a sister.
Maybe he's got, yeah.
But, like, his
support system's not readily available. Like, it's him in there.
Right. And that's, like, I can't imagine anything scarier. Like, that is scarier than a pit full of snakes. And I don't have children, and I'm never going to have children. And it's still terrifying.
Right. I just, to note, like, he's such a, you can tell he's such a loving dad, and that he affirms her all the time. And just that he wanted, so, like, I feel like as a parent, there must be some kind of like, okay, you do want things for your child, especially things they express to want for themselves. And maybe he didn't see things about Rick that he could have noticed. But like, I feel like that's maybe him wanting to, like, wanting what she wants, you know, like, if you like it, I love it sort of thing. Like, this seems like a good guy. I want that for you.
Rick definitely strikes me as the kind of guy who can charm a parent, especially a dad.
He can charm, yeah. Like, he can very much charm, yeah. Like, he has trouble with kids, but he's better with adults.
Right.
In terms of, like, I think adults just tend to find him less off-putting. I can definitely see a dad
being like, oh, yeah, this kid is great.
Yeah, he's very, like, gentlemanly. You know, dads like that sort of thing. Like, he's like, you like that sort of, okay, this guy is going to be respectful when it comes to my daughter. And they take the time to shake my hand, all that hullabaloo that my dad used to fucking look for in dudes. I'm like, don't even worry about it. It's not going to last long.
It's just fuck.
I'm just trying to bone. Yeah, it's so bad. Feel for Mr. McGregor, so, and we're robbed of both of these characters, because the little bit that we get of them is so much, and you're like, what could you have been like, what fleshing out if you had been allowed to be a character, like maybe how we get Marco's parents later in the series, like if you had been allowed to stick around, we would have gotten more from you. Like,
I mean, I take solace in knowing, like, we know that Terry doesn't die.
Spoiler alert, yeah, of a 20-year-old series, y'all. If y'all didn't know, Terry don't die. We just don't get no more of her.
They, you know, move on away from Degrassi. And
they do an LD on her.
Probably she's going to, like, she goes and lives an awesome life and becomes a model. And Jeff is great. He's her biggest fan. Or Jeff's not his name. That's Toby's dad.
Yeah,
whatever Mr. Toby's McGregor's dad. Name is great. He's her biggest fan. He falls.
He looks
in love.
Like he could be like a Gary.
He could be a Gary. Or like a Gary. Ted.
I would trust a Ted or a Gary. Gary
Although
or
Gary
Ted
McGregor.
McGregor
and Ted McGregor are both horrible names.
They are. But Ted and Terry McGregor. Ted and Terry McGregor.
David.
That's cute. David. But now I'm thinking 6 feet under. David McGregor is a little bit more of a solid for to accompany
John.
The mouthful that is McGregor. McGregor. Yeah.
But anyway, Mr. McGregor. They move elsewhere. Terry, they move like to Toronto, not the outskirts. Terry becomes a model and an advocate for victims of domestic violence. She goes to a normal school that is not cursed. And they're living their best lives. They're
she
out
never
there
gets a social disease. No social diseases for her. Yeah, no. I
Terry
mean,
gets
that's
a great
we...
stepmom who like loves her and supports her and like could not love her more if she had known her from the moment she was born. It's beautiful. Terry's great.
And eventually she gets a loving boyfriend, maybe towards mm-hmm. her senior year of high school, because she needs some time.
Yeah,
for herself.
From that coma.
She got to recover, and she also got to do some things for Terry. Some stuff right. just for her, and not motivated and trying to get nobody. Once you have found solace in yourself, you will never seek it outside of yourself.
We
wish
we
the best for this young
Spinner.
Lady.
Because Spinner consistently through this episode, I love Spinner. Because, you
I
know, first
Spinner.
We got him being like, no, we can't leave him behind.
Yes, right. Him being the like the outspoken, like, if we leave him behind, I have the feeling we're leaving her behind, too. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't do that.
And then I love him when Paige, like, is trying to push towards them having sex.
Mm-hmm.
And he immediately is like, nope.
Right. He's like, we're not doing this. You're upset. You're not
right.
thinking
You already have,
clearly.
Like, sexual trauma. We're not, this is
mm-hmm.
not something we're taking lightly at any point, and now is not the time. Man, that was another thing that I couldn't help but think about, was, like, poor Paige, like,
poor
does not
yeah.
need more trauma.
She doesn't, and just, like, I really think it's, Paige,
like,
she goes through a lot in this show, but I think that it's kind of, we don't always, I don't know if
when
we talked about
when she looks down
her,
and sees Terry's blood
yeah,
on her hand.
Her reaction to that is just like, oh my God. Like, she just, I think to hear it, you know, but then to see it and be a part of it, it's a completely different thing. To know someone is truly capable of this level of violence that you've interacted with, and then against someone that you love, and to just have the levels of interaction and involvement in this situation that Paige does have must really be, like, traumatic.
Also, what is with this weird fucking cinder block garden?
I was gonna say, what the fuck do? They just go back there and smash cinder
Apparently.
Blocks with hammers, go smashing shit, because he kicks that. His foot's gotta hurt, okay? Like, his foot, he's wearing those
right.
little soft skater shoes. Those, like, those soft, those got no, they have no fucking, like, they're not even those cardboardy type shoes. Those that you felt the weight of that cinder block on your foot. Oh my gosh. But to, just to throw it back to what you were saying about, like, Spinner kind of thwarting Paige in her sexual advances, like, I think it's so right of him to do so, because she immediately gets angry. And, like, that you can tell, like, she's fueled by the wrong things. Like, she's wanting to do it I don't like, it's hard to, I feel like, put myself exactly in the mentality, but.
No, it's that need to feel something besides what you're feeling. And like, yeah. It's very real. It is not the way to have your first time. And props to Spinner for knowing that. Because you know what? He probably wouldn't mind feeling something besides what he's feeling. Right,
feeling something besides what he's feeling. Yeah, and maybe then, it's that like grief or, yeah, that just you're overcome and then with.
I love him in the end. And like, okay, so this is a thing we've seen twice now from Spinner. When he wants to fight Dean.
Mm-hmm.
And then now him like wanting to hit Rick.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a thing a lot of people struggle with. And I think it does tend to be more men than women. Of like, and I think it's largely because you're not really allowed to feel feelings besides happy and angry.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that when they hear about somebody being sexually assaulted or physically abused,
mm-hmm.
their reaction is violence.
Yeah.
And while it's an understandable reaction, it is a purely self-serving reaction.
Right.
It doesn't undo what's been done. It makes the perpetrator into a victim.
Yes, it does.
It like it doesn't do anything but make you feel better. And there's a good chance it won't even actually do that.
Right. Yeah, the way that...
go ahead.
The way that Rick, like, whimpers and is just like, Spinner, stop! Like, he genuinely sounds terrified. And I think that that's... We're just supposed to be reminded that, like, Rick has been bullied. Rick has been bullied, like, incessantly. And it's not even, like, I believe we are told that, but we're also shown that in multiple instances. Being that person that people are looking out for to shit on every day is exhausting. You know, you just want to ask, why me? Why are you fucking with me? Like, there's, you know, it definitely feels so isolating. And you can tell that he has been defenseless so many times. In crucial points of his life, especially as a younger kid, you can tell that. He just wears it on his sleeve. And I mean, Ephraim does a really good job at showing us that skittishness at someone who has been hit before, who has been tormented before, physically intimidated before, by people like Spinner and Jimmy. And it really does, like, it... Again, it's not an excuse, but bullying is like extremely harmful. And there's a reason why primary schools, or if you're abroad, I say primary, I read a lot of literature from across the pond, but or elementary schools, when you know you have those foundational years, that's really why there's a lot of push for like no bullying. And I mean, schools kind of have their hands full with cyberbullying because that was not a thing for. That was not a thing for me until like maybe high school. And I was like, I'll just walk away from the motherfucking computer, man.
Can't in the same way.
And you can't, like, it's because everywhere.
The computer was a thing that you walked away from, not a thing that you walked around with in your fucking pocket.
Correct. Right. Yeah. It's very different. And even then, to have your like physical confrontations with people that don't like you is like, that's the old fashioned mode of bullying. But then to up the ante and like not be able to escape it is the new age. You know, then you can't, it's in your house. It's anywhere you go to seek enjoyment. You can't really escape it, which sounds like a fucking nightmare. But I really think that the detriment of bullying just isn't fully understood until things happen like they do in this storyline, in this eventual storyline, because then people start to reflect and say, okay, I really did play a role in this, because this person felt so othered that by years of being grinded down and beat and not to excuse that, like, there are many other avenues that there are many people that have been bullied and do not commit violence about it. Myself included. I was very heavily bullied. But did I commit violence about it? No, I didn't.
I think it's like anything. Like, we are all traumatized and we all cope with it in our ways. You know, it's like, you look at like people who look at addiction and they're like, well, I had a hard life and I'm not a junkie.
Exactly.
And like, cool.
That's good for you. Do you want a cookie? You know,
there but for the grace of God go I.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you lucked out and your circumstances were what they were. And like, yes. And not to take away all accountability, because there is absolutely accountability there. But like, also,
right.
You can only do so much with the tools that you have.
Right.
And some of us aren't given a full set. Most of us aren't Word. Given a full set.
Word, right? But there's some of us shit are given missing.
Like a teeny tiny wrench and that's it.
And that's it, right?
Yeah. And like,
absolutely.
And it is still beautiful imagery.
Very, yeah, no, but actually. But
treating
though.
People like shit is also inexcusable.
Right. And like, I mean, people, I really think that I'll never say this to my kids, the whole sticks and stones may break my bones, but words may never hurt me, because that shit is false.
It's dismissive as fuck. Words it's are hurtful dismissive. As fuck.
I have, like, you know, have some people hit me in my lifetime? Sure. But like, the words that people have said to me carry like way more than, and I sometimes am like fucking shopping in Sam's Club and I'm just in the middle of an aisle and I zone out thinking about the time somebody called me up.
Right.
You know, right. This, whereas, that, and the third.
I can think back. I can think back to like a time that I have been physically injured and be like, oh yeah, that sucked. But like, I can't like conjure the feeling
of right.
fracturing my wrist. But I can right. conjure the feeling.
Mm-hmm. Emotional scars, man.
Like, no, how sticks and stones is such a bullshit.
Yeah,
and
no.
It's dismissive and it's harmful.
Yeah. I mean, how someone, I think that's a quote, like, someone might forget what you did for them or whatever, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. Something like that. I know that yeah. made them feel, last part is the right part. But that's 100%, like, kind of how I live my life, because like, you never know, like an offhand comment, something that you said in anger, like that could stick with someone. And those are the things that like make me look at someone and feel a different way about them, because like, you know, we can, I maybe that's why guys can kick each other's asses and then they're and then they're right? friends later. Like, do we want to kick each other's asses and then, you know, then we're good. I don't endorse that, but maybe I understand a little bit more through this conversation.
And it's no, just, it sucks. It's shit.
It's a shitty, people, it's shitty like, either way.
People need to stop being shitty to people. And I, like, I think that I see a lot, I'm trying to be less chronically online, but like that I see a lot, like back when I still had Twitter, because mm-hmm. my Twitter feed was like, a lot of it was shit I didn't agree with, because mm-hmm. Twitter was where I went to go and be a fuckhead, you know?
Many exactly, people.
But like,
many people yeah. did the same.
I mean, mm-hmm. for the good fight, but like, I was not bringing my best self to Twitter. So you see it in a lot of discourse, but like seeing it in like discourse, you know, most commonly right now surrounding like using proper pronouns and not mm-hmm. deadnaming people and shit like that.
Yeah.
And an argument that you see a lot against treating people with like basic decency and respect is that mm-hmm. like the world is a mean place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
And like,
fair. Okay. It is, but yeah.
And there is a degree to which like, you know, we can't change the greater systems in place,
mm-hmm.
but we can treat each other better. And right. if we treat each other better, like, there's still going to be a lot of fuckery in the world, but a lot of it gets better
right.
really fucking fast. Really fucking True. Fast.
No, actually, though, it definitely costs nothing to treat your fellow right. human with respect, like, especially if there's something that doesn't, you know, who's it hurting by honoring someone's request?
Right. Nothing.
It's You're doing me. Harm, you know, if you decide to do whatever the fuck you want anyway, which I don't know. Like, I feel like people are menaces. People just
right.
Like,
and I mean, I think
like
it's,
don't
it's
feed
because
the
we're
trolls.
All severely traumatized and hurting and like whatever. Yeah. But like,
it's to me, it's so difficult. I think people have a hard time with like shifting, rapidly shifting political correctness, at least that's what we called it in the aughts, is being PC. I'm sure there's a different term now. I don't keep up with it. I just try to keep the sentiment the same of kind of thinking about recent changes to things that I maybe did before. And a lot of times it doesn't affect me. A lot of times it doesn't affect me if someone says, okay, you might have known me, and I use cisgender woman pronouns, and now I'm going by they, them, non-binary pronouns. Cool. You know, you like it, I love it. Like, I'm like, what does that do for me to say, fuck you, I'm not going to do that? What kind of, and I feel like that's just going out of your way to kind of create an environment where you're saying, no, I won't adapt. No, I won't honor someone with basic respect in regards to what they want to be called. Like, we do the same for, like, when someone says they want a nickname or they have a preferred name. Like, it's the same kind of concept. Harley
for almost a decade.
I went by Saiba for a solid year, and that's my name backwards.
And then I was like, no, I want to be Caroline.
Right.
And no, like, a few people call me Carly, but any of them at any point, if I was like, please don't call me that anymore, they mm-hmm. might slip up time and again, but they're going to call me Caroline. Like,
yeah. I mean, I've definitely had several friends since high school, you know, switch their pronouns or adopt different names. And I can count on maybe one hand the times that I've actually like slipped up talking to them.
And it happens.
And it happens.
Like, I don't want to speak for, like, as somebody who is cisgender as fuck, like, it just is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to speak for other people, but, like, in my experience, the people that I know who are trans and non-binary, like, if mm-hmm. you fuck up their pronouns and it's a genuine fuck up,
mm-hmm,
like,
right.
they're not going to be upset about it.
Right. That, they, yes.
You know, maybe it hits them on the wrong day. And so, like, yeah, they feel a little something about it. But they're also, mm-hmm. like, it's not some long-term thing that they're going to carry. If you're right. genuinely trying. If you're genuinely.
Right. If you're genuinely trying and then you're making an effort to kind of, at going forward, you recognize that you slipped up.
This for me, it's always so not about pronouns, though.
It's not. We definitely we love a tangent, but we are making fabulous time. I think we only have a little bit more discussion of the A plot before we segue, because I mean, I kind of think we've hammered it home. We know what happens with Terry. For now, she's badly bandaged in a fucking hospital bed.
Well, I wanna talk about Spinner a little, because that mm-hmm. last scene, so after he
wants to him hit and Paige. Rick, yeah,
and then he's off with Paige and he's like, I'm just like him, I'm violent, and yes. she's like, no, you stopped yourself, like, you're yeah, different,
you're different.
And I think it's a very, like, powerful moment for Spinner to have very early on
mm-hmm.
in his life, of, like, yeah. seeing the direct effects that violence can lead to. And not that he doesn't fuck up again, you know? But, right. like, I don't know. I think Spinner learns a lot this episode, and I like that.
He does. He learns a lot, and he advocates. And he really does do a great job of not only stepping in for Paige, but also stepping in for Terry, and just trying to make it, like, that it's nobody's fault here. I really think that's the biggest takeaway that I have, is just, like, it's nobody's fault, except Rick's fault. But, like, I'm saying, like, everyone else feel like they, at least Paige and Spinner, kind of lament that they blame each other for the situation even being able to happen. But I think that I always think during that scene, like, okay, maybe if it didn't happen at this time, it would have happened at some other time. And maybe you guys wouldn't have been there to actually help Terry. That's always my thought is just, like, what if it happened when they went on a picnic or something, or did something by themselves.
And Rick just took off into the woods and then
like he fucking does, scurries away, doesn't
To be fair, he is trying to help Terry. Like he
doesn't have a cell phone, most likely.
Probably.
He probably does not have a cell phone.
Spinner had to run and grab his.
They were not something that everybody had. So it's possible that he would have maybe tried to go get help. But like Terry says, where they, like, maybe they're not even probably near, anywhere near where they live. And her saying, like, it's far, like, walking home is far. So we have to assume that because Paige wanted to use the car to get out there, that they're not anywhere really near home or help, so to speak. Like, they don't know where they are. This was also
they're probably
pre-GPS. Yes, this is also pre-GPS. So maybe he doesn't know where the police department is. And in that time of trying to do that, who knows what would have happened to Terry.
Right.
If they were alone.
And like, there is nobody to blame but Rick. And then Rick's too far removed from like your people that like you can be angry at Rick, but it's also somehow not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also really like there's not enough people to be angry with.
Right.
There's so much anger and hurt in a situation like that. And like, I don't know. I love these kids.
I know. It's so hard. It really is hard. And they're kids.
Like none of them but Rick are to blame. Like even Paige, like, yes, she did not handle that situation well.
No.
But Terry and Rick probably would have walked off anyway.
I think so.
And it wouldn't have been as heated.
I don't think it would have been as heated, but for Rick, it doesn't take very much for him to get
heated
with her.
It really doesn't. It was doomed from the minute she told him not to sit on the car. It correct. Was doomed from the minute that all of their body language showed that none of them wanted
him. That none of them wanted him there, and he knows that. He recognizes that even though Terry may want him there, that doesn't mean anybody else does.
Right.
And they're not going to hide it. They have reason to not fuck with him.
Yeah, no, it's...
But Spinner definitely comes through in this episode. And I mean, I think to an extent, Paige comes through this episode as well. Like,
yeah.
She has her moments where I'm just like, Paige. But I really do think she's always coming from a place of like, it's outrageous that you let this fucking guy back in your life when he has hurt you.
Yeah.
And maybe her outrage comes from like, as someone who's been hurt, we need to stay away from the people who hurt us. Maybe that it's that simple. Like,
yeah, no, definitely. And that difficult. That can be really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Because it's a completely different situation than Paige's trauma. But I mean, it still feels close enough for that to be a plausible line of her thinking.
Well, right, and I'm sure that it's, I'm sure it's confusing for her, because she would never mm-hmm. hang out with Dean.
Right. It's confusing for her. And she's just doing the best she can, right.
And she loves Terry, and...
She does, right.
I don't know.
There's the way she says, oh, Terry, oh, she's so good. She's so good. The devastation that they both, that Spinner and Paige both have through this episode is so good, in the way that you really can, you feel how devastated they are.
They really are two of my favorite characters. And I feel like with mm-hmm. Spinner in particular, like, I don't like a lot of what he does.
Right.
I think he does some really shitty things.
Yes.
And is just kind of a shithead a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like he's one of those, he comes through when it matters. Same very with Paige, so. You know, the way Paige is there for Ellie with the cutting, the way she's there for Manny with the pregnancy. Like, I was thinking about it, like, Paige is a better friend to her enemies and acquaintances than she is to her friends.
No fair, though.
I mean, and granted, we don't see her friends go through a lot of the same trauma that we're seeing, like, Manny and Ellie go through. But, like, I don't know. I had forgotten just how much I love Paige in Whisper to a Scream.
Mm-hmm. Same, similar voice, like, oh, Ellie. Like, just,
yeah, it's okay.
My image of her running her fingers, like, up.
She's got to be so Ellie's freaked arm. Out, too. So freaked out.
And that's why, and that's kind of what, you know, are you freaked out by me? Like, I'm used to people being freaked out by me, but it's like, though, even though Paige is probably freaked out by her, she handles her so delicately and does not repel her, despite maybe feeling like, okay, I want to walk away. This is uncomfortable.
Her face flashes freaked out for a second. And then she's like, yeah, no, I love Paige. I love Paige's growth. I love Spinner's growth. Spinner does make me mad a lot of the time, though.
First of all, that man has so many instances of me being like, okay, Spinner, you've hit your quota this episode.
Right.
Sit down. But this is one of the episodes where I'm like, he spinners in such a way that is like needed. His energy is so needed in this episode. And I mean, I think maybe that's what makes his character. And he also just goes through so fucking much as a character. He's there the whole fucking time, basically. If you don't walk away liking something about Spinner, then you're broken, because they literally throw everything at Spinner in the everything. Course of his Degrassi time. But he's very good in this episode, and oh gosh, just such a devastating episode. We don't get to see Jimmy and Hazel's reactions, but the friend group is pretty solid here. I think they kind of put Hazel in the back during that whole confrontation scene. They kind of stuck her in the back with the
edge. Hazel, though, I love when they pan to like Spinner before, I think it's before Spinner and Paige go out to look for Terry.
Mm-hmm.
And Hazel's in this group of people, and she's like, I don't know what they're talking about. But she's just
yeah,
like,
she's like, that
movie
yeah.
was even stupider. And I just yeah, they're like, all it's laugh. A very cute Hazel moment.
Yes, right. She's like the center of attention, and there's like so many dudes in that circle too. She must have been very happy, because you know Hazel loves to flirt, even though she's in a relationship.
Nah, Jimmy's right there. They're good.
No, I'm joking. Kind of.
Do you want to move into segments?
Yes, because I love this fucking song so much that this episode is named after, and I did not even need to listen to it because it's like my karaoke jam.
I didn't either, but I did. But I listened to the Ariana Grande Miley Cyrus version because it's my favorite.
Because it's a great version.
Although the one that I know best is, of course, the Sixpence None the Richer version. But that's not really the original.
No, Crowded House is the original. That's the one I know very to like the back of my hand. Don't ask me, because I believe they're like Australian. I think they are Australian, or is that Aha? That might be Aha.
I think that's Aha.
That's probably
I
Aha.
I just found there's a TikTok of a different performance of Ariana and Miley singing that, so we're gonna watch that later.
Oh my gosh, their voices sound so great on that so song. Good. I need to listen to the Sixpence None the Richer. Don't Dream Now It's Over. I don't think I've listened to that in.
It's a good one.
Quite a long time.
It's a beautiful song.
I think no matter how you, I mean, as long as you have this a similar sort of voice, like, range, I think all of the instances I've heard of that song are really good. I feel like people don't fuck with that song because it's such a good song. However, though the lyrics have some relevance here, we just know it's for the Don't Dream It's Over. Which for me, like, the title's always been so strong of just being like, okay, you know, the realities of the world are rapidly approaching and you cannot do anything to escape them. Maybe that's a little doomsday, but that's kind of how the song is. That's kind of what the song is saying. Yeah. It's essentially like, yeah, I've tried everything. I've done everything. There's just a bunch of shit in the paper.
But you turn right over to the TV page.
Right. It's like, oh, you're completely oblivious, though the world is burnt. It's like that meme that, like, this is fine, the dog at the table.
Yeah, so we might as well be together.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's
maybe more thematically relevant than, like,
a couple of the other songs recently.
But not by much.
But not by that much. No. No.
Like, I mean, who is the singer? I mean, I assume that's Rick, right?
Yes, the singer would be Rick. Because I think, you know, he needs to serenade her.
Yeah.
When the world comes in, they come to build a wall between us. You know they won't win.
All right. Yeah.
Rick's like, fuck these haters. It's you and me.
Us against the world.
Us against the world. They could have, you know, they could have dropped O3 Bonnie and Clyde on here. It's not an 80s song. It's literally titled "O3 Bonnie and Clyde," but I think it works. But no, I think it. This is such a good song. It's gonna make me have a cover of "Don't Dream It's Over" day. But
all right, so from there, is it time to go to the next corner?
To Le Fashion Corner.
Le Fashion Corner.
Le Fashion. Yeah. Yeah. Let's mosey. So, there was so many Ellie outfits in this episode. Like, so many.
Okay, but she also, like, repeated her, like, outfit and her last outfit.
I was gonna say, did they think my hawk-eyed ass would not notice that, like, she's wearing that heavily studded belt?
It's the exact same top, it's the exact same skirt. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like the that webbing and the spiky necklace and it's like a turtleneck. Yeah. She definitely, and does Marco repeat his outfit too?
I mean maybe.
And wait, I think she borrows fucking Ashley's shirt. That army fatigue shirt. I feel like she borrows it at some point in the episode.
She's wearing a different army fatigue shirt.
Why didn't they coordinate? Like, that was a mistake.
For the movie, too, where she's got, like, a red that top. It's like a red graphic tee with a black tube top over it.
Yes, she was.
And a trench coat.
Mm-hmm. She's like, I am the moment. It's like that corsetti type black overlay, so you can see the top and the bottom of her
and
red shirt.
And she's got a bunch of like chains and spikes and.
Mm-hmm. That coat is very oversized.
With a braid up the back.
Yeah, she's rocking this. She did that twisty whatever that braid thing, like one, and she's like, "I'm wearing this all week. I don't give a fuck."
I love Paige when they're at the cinder block gardens.
I have a few more fashions in that scene.
Okay.
Sorry. I just feel like going back
no,
and forth.
You're good.
Alex's outfit. Because we also get Alex's first line ever.
Is it her first line ever?
Yeah, because I think she's just sat in the back and popped gum. To be honest.
No, it's not. No, because she says about Emma, she's like, she really is flat as a board, huh?
Oh, that was her first one. She really is flat as a board. Okay, so this is her second line. She's got, like, I think that they're supposed to be clunky, high-heeled, like mid-calf boots. But, I mean, I kind of dig them. They look like Bratz boots to me. And a mini skirt and her matching jean jacket. And I feel like it just looks like they're still trying to figure out what character Alex is going to be, because this does not look like what the future Alex that we get to know is going to wear. She is strictly wide leg jeans only. But then I feel like Marco's outfit as well. Like, they look like they could be a couple, Marco and Ellie at the movie theater.
I hate Marco's outfit.
I mean, to be fair, I think that they both have the same energy. Like, we look a mess, and we threw this, like, we've got many layers.
And I'm going to make sure you see every one of them.
You've got to see every one of them. They're messily, like, I've got a bomber jacket. I've got a collared shirt, starched collars.
white t-shirt under it, or maybe that's my puka shell necklace. I don't know.
I think that might be
the sleeves coming out of the bottom.
Yes. The very tight jeans. And then, of course, he's got that, it looks like a corduroy page boy cap like, or Newsboy Cap.
I hate it's Marco. So,
they're like very different brands of cringe, but they are also like cringing me out on the same level.
Right.
But yeah. Cinder blocks.
At the Cinder Block Gardens, Paige is wearing this very cute, like, she's got cuffed jeans, and she's wearing, like, a long, like, thigh-length sweater.
Yes.
Yeah. That's, like, greens and dark yellows and blues. And
yeah, it's cute on her. She's and got I the like, glasses, the headband, the whole
She's got the episode. Glasses. And I love Spinner's fucking Andre the Giant shirt. I've loved it before, but I love it this time too.
Noted. I don't know why I have so many fucking screenshots of him, his brown hoodie. But I really like Hazel's jacket. You know, I love a jacket moment. Because in the front, it's like, it's got that like varsity sort of detail on the bottom of the jacket and the cuffs, and it's like a tan or I want like a gray, and then she turns around and boom, it's a jean jacket, and I love it so much.
I love a jacket. I wish that I knew how to like cross stitch, because I'd get a jacket and I'd cross stitch like our pasta selves on it for you. But I don't know how to do that, and I'm not learning for you.
And you're not learning. You're like, I'm not doing that. And why is this the last?
They're so small.
Well, I'm fair. I don't want that for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I'm upset that this is the last episode or the last mediocre Terry outfit we get, and there's just not one. Except, like, I feel like there's not really an outfit for Terry that I feel like tops or is the top. Maybe her Eye of the Beholder dance
outfit.
It's her
dance outfit, and it's her cabaret outfit.
Oh, her cab, right. Her cabaret outfit.
No, she looks cute when they perform Poor Thing.
And she looks cute when they perform Poor Thing.
She's probably still wearing those fucking white New Balances, though.
They don't want to, and they, first of all, the disrespect at having her legs so high up in the air, and you just need to emphasize that you guys have not given this lady new shoes since the first season. Gosh, you suck, Degrassi Wardrobe Department, specifically when Terry is concerned.
It's so painful.
I feel so bad for her.
It's infuriating.
And especially when they give, like when they give fucking Ashley the shit, like Ashley's kind of serving in this episode, like during the scene in the computer lab, in the MI lab, they don't call it a computer lab. She's wearing like this, it looks like, you know how you used to cut up shirts? It looks like this could have been a shirt that she modified. The sleeves are obviously something she could have done, cut up the side. And the neckline is a very heavy V, and it looks like it could have been like two maybe band tees sewn together or something like that. And it's she's got the bodice of it is blue and the sleeves are red, and it's a really cute outfit for her. Like it's really, really cute. I mean the rest of it is pretty underwhelming, but I mean it's just jeans and some chucks, but I'd like when they have these resources to give Ashley these kind of outfits, and then they have fucking Terry looking like Freddy Krueger with her dad's fucking Focaccia Reeboks. I'm so upset. Like, it's, I'm so mad. Justice for Terry on so many fucking fronts. But in this corner, like the fashion corner is going to miss you, Terry, because we love you. But I will not miss talking about the fucking shoes they put on your feet.
And so once more, we ask, what are those?
What are those? It will not be the final time. But yeah.
It will be.
Well, for those. Well, right. We don't get the boot. Well, I will never see her cowboy boots again. Liberty's cowboy boots.
That's fine.
That's fine. Her cape. I'm fine with that. Yeah, they just okay. And I have Paige's ending outfit, not ending outfit. The first time they go to the hospital, her layered moment with the brown cami, looks like a lace cami underneath, and a white shirt with that little tie string in the front, and a belt that is just for the fashion. It's not functional. We did hip belts. We just put them on there, and some khakis. It's a cute outfit for her. I really did not realize she was holding a bag until she walks away quickly down the hallway. But her bag is also really cute. It looks like it's got some sort of brown pattern, but she's tucking it so tightly under her arm. I can't really see much else. Did you have the ending outfit?
What page is it?
Yes, that jacket.
Yeah, that jacket. I don't know that I'm saying that I like it.
I don't know that I'm saying that I like it. I'm more here for the... It
definitely, harkens, a time.
I was going to say a time.
A moment. It doesn't help that the screenshot that I have of her in it is, really bad. It's, as she's running to Spinner.
One that was better than mine.
It's a meme.
Mine is so... just the effort to...
right.
Yeah, no. Oh gosh.
No, should we...
Ellie Nash, you are an outfit repeater.
Right. Yeah. In 1 week, Ellie.
In 1 week, Ellie. You think no one's gonna notice because you got so many layers? Well, we noticed.
Maybe she's a cartoon character. Where she's only got, she's got 3 or 4 outfits, but she opens her closet and it's Doug, except it's, 6 of each outfit.
I would buy that. What will
I wear today? I would buy that. Which seems a good transition into
The shots
fired.
Shots fired.
Pew, 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 pew.
Shots fired.
You want to just back and forth it?
Let's do it.
My first one is when Sean walks into Caitlin's conference room, mm-hmm. and he says security cameras. I thought tape recorders were the next big thing.
It's cute that they can make fun of themselves now. Right? My first one is Marco saying, I'd hate to miss a minute of elimination round, whatever.
Mine is Marco saying, hello, Jay, and Jay saying, yeah.
Interactions I didn't know I needed.
Right.
My second one is Paige saying, ill spin, you're turning my stomach. Could you please eat like a person?
My next one is, Rick, I'd rather you not dent my parents' van with your butt.
So this is Rick after he pops out from the side of that van. I don't think we talked about it, but gosh, that was crazy. The way he slides out from out behind that van is creepy. And he says, he's something or other.
You have that's no a right bit, to tell Terry who to hang out with.
Right, who dictates who Terry hangs out with. And two, you're a vicious backstabber. And I more included the two, you're a vicious backstabber, because
she's not backstabbing you, dude. You're not friends. You've never been friends.
You can't. Right. You can't backstab someone you're not friends with.
She's been very upfront about how she feels about you.
She don't like you, Rick.
I think you know what my last one is, and it transitions from your last one. So if you want to just hit with the rest of what you've got.
Yes. So I have Paige in the back and forth with Rick. She caps it off saying, I'd rather be that than a psycho. And then my next one is Sean telling Ellie, what? I just wanted to spend time alone. And Ellie saying, got your wish. And my last one is Paige and Spinner in the car, Paige saying, if I'd have left him, none of this would have ever happened if I'd left him at the dot like I wanted to.
And then Spinner hits her with, I'm not the one who told her to go off with him. These are not fun shots fired, which oftentimes shots fired are. These are hurtful.
These are hurtful.
They are shots, and we felt they needed to be counted.
They did. They did.
Let's get our super bummers out of the way first.
I mean, I think it's pretty clear.
Rick. Obviously, yeah, it's Rick. It's Rick. Also, Ellie and Sean.
Yeah, I mean, Ellie and Sean both kind of sucked. And I mean, I'm glad that Ellie kind of brought that up in her. She's like, I did, you know, suck. I'm not been a good girlfriend, but you suck too. Which point? Point received. Yeah. They both suck.
But I'd take either of them over Rick any day of the week.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Shining Stars is a little harder, you know? We've got, I mean, not harder. We have a lot. I think, obviously, Spinner and Paige.
Yeah. I think supporting Shining Stars are Hazel and Jimmy because they do have lines which support them, you know, the overall wanting to keep Terry safe. And
yeah, no, by and large, all four of these kids are, like, dealing with this situation very well as it's unfolding.
Right. Exact as it's unfolding, absolutely. I think Marco for me is a shining star because he really does. Like, I don't think that Ellie would have arrived at that. We love to see Marco,
Ellie get told about herself.
Oh, well, yes. I mean, I think that when it's in a loving way, it really does go much, like, farther for her. And I mean, that she's only going to listen. She doesn't really listen to people like she listens to Marco anyway.
Why should anybody extend her that courtesy when her version of the loving way is first rule of purity,
take a shower every day. Yeah. I hear her voice in my head sometimes, and I've been out of puberty. But I think that it really, like I said, he brings out the best in her. He really does kind of save their relationship, her and Sean's relationship, before it even really got off the ground. Because it would have just crashed and burned without him, like, encouraging her to grow a little bit. So we love it. We love growth.
Do love it.
Was it growth that she was pushed into? Yeah, but sometimes we need a little push, you know? We need a little pushy poo. I think that's fine. Growth is still growth. We do. But yeah, I don't... Snake?
Yeah, Snake handled the whole thing very well, but I don't think he was the shining star.
He's not a shining star. I just love Snake.
We do. Manny wasn't. And I did.
Manny wasn't in this. Emma wasn't in this. I wouldn't have given it to Emma, even if... don't like Emma, sorry. But if Manny was in here, you know, she's got very limited time to just be a shining star because she's starting to ruin it for me.
Yeah, Manny's been kind of sucked, like, for a while, but we're
damn it, you ruined it. Right, we love her, but
we were rooting for you.
We were all rooting for you. How dare you?
I think this one's a no-brainer, but Ava's my friend. Does it go there?
Well, indeed it does. Yes,
I mean,
friend,
just
does.
A little domestic violence, you know, a little sprinkle,
just a little sprinkle. Yeah, I mean, these are obviously go there issues. So, even though they were hand fisted in about 23 minutes,
That leg flop
happens at like 11 minutes.
And it's not even a flop. It's so rigid.
It's just like whoop, whoop. Like the stunt woman did that. Was that one take?
I don't know. They did Terry so dirty. We're not going to have a retrospective.
They did Terry so dirty. Yes, we have so much more to say about Terry, obviously. And I mean, we've got a couple more episodes before she's just like a figment of their imagination and they don't talk about her anymore.
Right.
So the retrospective is going to be timely. I think we've got like a handful of episodes, honestly. Past I Want Candy, I think she's persona non grata. So yeah.
Yeah, now it goes there. Definitely goes there.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks for listening to Your Mom's Podcast. Next week, we'll be joined again by Chris Ruiz of the Sunday Fire to discuss the Battle of the Bands in Rock and Roll High School.
This episode of Your Mom's Podcast is brought to you in part by Elimination Round 3, The Dot, and support from listeners like you.
If you'd like to further support our show, you can find us on TikTok and Facebook as Your Mom's Podcast. We also have a Facebook group of the same name. and you can find us on Instagram at YMPadcast. Your Mom's Podcast is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscriptions and reviews are another great free way to support us. However, if you're interested in supporting us in not free ways, we have a lot of great bonus content on our Patreon, and some great merch at our shop, which can be found at your-moms-padcast-shop.forthwall.com. And remember, that's Padcast. PAHDCAST. Thank you.
And now we would like to take a moment to thank our Patreon subscribers. Octavia Faith,
June Bard,
Margot Mancini, and a special thanks to our Titty Snake producer, Alika Fenderson.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Ew, I hate how I said thank you. Thank you.